Big Sloth.
To begin. How to start? I'm hungry. I should get coffee. Coffee would help me think. But I should write something first, then reward myself with coffee. Coffee and a muffin. Okay, so I need to establish the themes. Maybe banana nut. That's a good muffin.
Hobo Radio, the official podcast of HoboTrashCan.com. You can share your thoughts on the show anytime by emailing Joel at murphyslaw@HoboTrashCan.com.
Hey, this is Chris.
And this is Joe from the Curioso Podcast.
And you're listening to Hobo Radio, Hobo in the Morning.
Away put your weapons. They mean you no harm. Hobo Radio, you are listening to with Joel and Murphy and Lars.
Hello again. I'm Joel Murphy. This is Hobo Radio. With me, as always, my good buddy Lars.
Hey, man.
I like that you sat up and actually paid attention.
Yeah, no, I have been paying attention the entire time.
Have you?
Yes.
Yeah.
We've been some marathon and some podcasts tonight.
I know. It's exciting because what people might not realize is, 2 weeks ago, you all heard our good friends Christopher Scarborough and Joe Taylor from The Curioso on a podcast. And it seems like for us in real time, 2 weeks that we've been in this room recording.
Hold on. Because you said our names. Are we allowed to talk now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the rule.
Okay. Yeah. Yay!
It's like Beetlejuice. You've been summoned.
Okay, good. Nice fucking model.
But yeah, we've reached, this is the home stretch, guys.
This is it.
This is, you've all, of course, listened to our first show where we were just, fucking around, really.
Well, normally I usually drink about 2 beers per podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our third podcast that we're recording tonight.
Yeah, you can do that math at home.
Yes.
So this is where we're at. We're all in a fun, it's late at night, we're all feeling punchy, and we're talking about Nicolas Cage.
Oh, the Cage.
That is the subject.
So we, again, like I said, you all listened, I'm sure. Some of you at 1.5 speed. And you heard us in our first half talk about sort of the life of Nicolas Cage.
Mm-hmm. And the life and times.
The life and times, the man, the myth, the
slam
legend.
Dancer.
Yeah, the slam dancer. if you haven't listened to that, I mean, I don't know that this isn't – the chronology doesn't really matter.
No. You can either or.
You can go back, but they definitely
– I just realized I totally forgot about the time where he put Vince Neil in an arm bar. Did you guys see that video?
No.
Oh, yeah. He totally put Vince Neil in an arm bar. And I mean, he's like in his 50s at that time. Man, Joe, you have to edit this into our podcast.
No.
It's here. It's fine. It's a little extra. But yeah.
Like we're bleeding
into
each
Easter
other.
Egg.
Yeah. So we talked about some of the lore. We talked about the castles, the marriages, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But for this, we thought, why not just go into the movies? Like, as much as we're about anything.
He has an extensive list.
He definitely does. And I mean, if one of us in this room has seen all of those films, it's Christopher Scarborough.
Probably.
Yeah. The biggest Nick Cage fan there is.
Because I am such a Nick Cage fan. I've seen National Treasure. Does that count?
No.
We brought up an interesting point in the last show, which was you said that the first Nicolas Cage movie you ever saw was?
That was Con Air.
Was Con Air. Yeah, well, let's play that game. Okay. I think that might be a fun start.
Yeah.
What's the first movie that we – although I have a feeling that the other three of us, it's going to be the same movie. Because for me, it was Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
No, mine was Raising Arizona.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what? I got to be honest with you. Can I change my vote again? Because
no.
I
there
think,
is no vote.
No.
You just told us a fact.
These are just facts. So what you're saying is, can I admit I lied to you?
I think I did see him in Raising Arizona first. I just didn't know it was him. His hairline had changed so much.
Yeah, the first, don't talk about his hairline. Second, no, we're going to talk about it a lot.
We covered
that. No, but yeah, that was a show in our area. It was a show that they showed a lot of like Saturday afternoons. It was like the matinee on our Fox affiliate or whatever.
Yeah, I want to say that I saw Raising Arizona with commercials.
Because I remember subsequently every time I saw him, even in Fast Times, you know, for like 5 years or so after I first saw him, I was like, that's the guy from Raising Arizona.
Yeah, right. Well, I'll say the first thing I saw him was in Fast Times. There's zero chance I remembered I just know that I saw that before I ever saw.
Right. That was my first.
Why did you see that one first? That has some very adult themes. There's nudity.
Yeah.
Oh, there is abortion. There are people doing drugs and kids should not know about drugs.
I'll explain this to you quite simply. My parents had HBO. When I was a kid, and they went to bed before me and my brother did. So we saw a lot of movies we probably should not have seen.
There's your answer, Fishbulb.
Yeah.
That was well done. But I guess that's maybe the next question is, when did we start being aware of Nicolas Cage, or when did you start tracking him? Because obviously Raising Arizona is an amazing movie, and I definitely remember him from that, and he stands out in that. That's probably just looking through his IMDb for us, because I'm sure there are people out there who might say Moonstruck or Peggy Sue Got Married.
Yeah, or Vampire's Kiss or Deadfall or Guarding Tess.
Right. Guarding Tess.
Guarding Tess.
That's your
intro. Yeah,
that's harsh.
I'd love to meet that person.
Guarding Tess is fucked up because that is a movie that's a fish out of water film. When you first start watching it, there's a cantankerous first lady still has the Secret Service.
I honestly don't think I can distinguish it from Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. In my head, they're the same movie.
Because that's the thing is like, she has this, you know, she lives in the old home and like, he's trying to be like, no, I'm supposed to protect you. You can't do whatever you want. And she's like, I do whatever I want. And it turns into she gets kidnapped and buried alive.
Yeah. But it's like half Guarding Tess. I mean, half, you know, the hell is the name of that movie? Where the lady
Driving Miss Daisy?
Yes.
You made the hand motion of a steering wheel. And I got
exactly
you.
What I'm talking about. But yes, it's partly that. And it's I hope people didn't see that first.
Yeah, no, that would be rough. You know what's weird? We talked about it a little bit on your show, but I do remember Honeymoon in Vegas. Like, I remember watching that movie. I even think that I saw it at an age when I didn't enjoy it. Like, I didn't think it was good. But
I think here's the rub is that the early stuff, I remember. Yeah, that was Nicolas Cage.
Right.
I didn't actually, you know, pay attention to Nicolas Cage.
Right.
Until probably, you know, The Rock, Con Air.
I mean, that's
Face Off.
That's the delineation, right? Because there aren't any fine lines. He transitioned from one thing into the other because in the 80s, he was very much just like, he was an 80s actor.
The guy.
Yeah. There's this, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. There's a, as the French would say, and I don't know what about something. There's a quality that really popular young actors and actresses had in the 80s that made them super 80s.
Right.
You know, Molly Ringwald had it. Nicolas Cage had it. The Brat Pack had it, I guess. All of them did.
Yeah.
And there was just something about it. And I don't know what that was. And then in the 90s, the dude was acting.
Yeah.
Whether if it was a comedic role or a serious role or an action role, he was finding a character and like disappearing into that character.
Right.
And then the late 90s, he's just, I'm Nicolas Cage now, and I'm going to be Nicolas Cage.
Right, right.
And it wasn't the same character in every movie, but it was Nicolas Cage in every movie.
But he did a walk-in. He basically, if you watch Walken's career, it's exactly the same lines as a Christopher Walken.
So what you're saying is, once he got an Oscar, he became a breakout star.
Well, he wasn't. It's like once he got an Oscar, which was in 1995 for Leaving Las Vegas, for those keeping track at home. But I think it's like once that happened, that the pressure was off. And it was just like, I can do whatever the fuck I want. I want an Oscar. They can't take it back.
Right.
So
right.
Because you look at it.
I've put in the work.
Right. And it's like he won an Oscar in 1995. Mm-hmm. In 1996, he made The Rock.
Yeah.
So it was like immediately he was like, this is what I'm doing now.
Yeah. It was probably, you know, started production in 95.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah. So it's like. I don't know if he won the Oscar or not, but clearly, like, he did the Oscar movie and then was like, I'm fucking having fun.
Right.
Makes The Rock, follows that up with Face Off, Con Air, Snake Eyes. Like, just three.
Well, oh, you're missing one. City of Angels.
Well, City of Angels was after Snake Eyes.
Was it?
Yeah. Well, they were both 98. So.
Oh, both 98. Okay.
Yeah. But, like, so he does these, you know, big action movies, mm-hmm. essentially, that are just... Each one ridiculous and amazing in its own way.
Right, right. I mean, it's sort of like the intro to his action movie star.
Right. And you would say that, like, The Rock is the moment, right? Like, that's – but it's when he – when we see Nicolas Cage as the Nicolas Cage he's going to become.
Right.
I feel
right.
like The Rock is the first – glimpse of that.
Yes, yes.
This is now Nicolas Cage action star.
He was a bit outshined by the Connery.
Sure.
You know, but that was our you know, first foray.
I like the hand gesture.
The first foray yeah. into the Cage.
Yes.
Hold on. I wouldn't say, I mean, I haven't seen Vampire's Kiss, the entire thing. I watched two YouTube clips of it, but there is definitely one where the large meme of his crazy eyes are there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I watched that entire scene where he's talking to the woman. I don't remember her name. It's Annabelle or something. And he's like, oh, and he's just like, his eyes are just going crazy. But I really feel like
it's the meme.
That is the meme, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I don't have to tell you listeners what the meme is. It's that meme.
You know the meme. Even if you didn't know that that's what it was.
It's the almost unibrow meme.
Right.
Yeah. So that is like, he is very cagey right there. Well, and that's before he goes action star.
But there are glimpses. That's what I'm saying. There are glimpses. But I feel like The Rock was the declaration. That was him going this is where we're headed.
Right. This is what I'm doing now.
That was super Keanu.
Every time. I tried to make it better.
You're getting better.
Kind of where he said, I don't give a shit anymore.
Basically,
well,
yeah.
He does get, like, I will never believe that Nicolas Cage doesn't give a shit. I think he gives a shit every time.
I think
just
he gives
like,
too much of a shit.
Either too much of a shit or giving a shit about, like, just the wrong things.
Well, yeah. Right. It's what attracts him to a movie is
that's
fascinating.
That's what it is, right? Yeah. Because I've never seen a Nicolas Cage performance and thought, well, he's just cashing a paycheck. He's working his ass off. It's just sometimes I'm like, what are you working on right now?
But then, hold on. But after those, you know, Con Air, Face Off, City of Angels, Snake Eyes, then you have 8mm and Bringing Out the Dead. Two completely different movies from that lineup.
Yeah.
But they're both, as we discussed in our Curioso episode, they are both kind of more a cult movie.
Yeah, yeah, but...
not a cult, but a cult movie.
Right. But I'm saying, like, the character portrayal.
Right.
They are more, you know, cerebral, brooding.
Sure. Yeah, he's going... Well, even City of Angels was an attempt to do something different.
Right, but he was more stoic in City
of Angels. Yeah.
You know, didn't say a lot. You know, it's kind of just hung out with Meg Ryan, and that was about it.
Right. Which, if you can hang out with 90s Meg Ryan.
All right. Yeah. 90s Meg Ryan.
Plus, like, being an angel that was in Earth was big then. Both he and Travolta did it.
Yeah. And, I mean, but so did Walken and Glenn Danzig in Part 3.
Yep. And that was a period in American pop culture history where you had to see Dennis Franz's ass and everything.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Had we really
were lucky enough to.
We loved his ass for a while.
Can you blame us? If loving his ass is wrong.
Oh my God.
I don't want to be right. But I also, can we just take a minute before we get too far? To talk about Face Off, because I think we need to spotlight Face Off.
It's a movie I know. It's a movie I know.
Well, that's because you were the guy in it, right?
Yeah.
Weren't you the
sidekick?
You
did
the
a little Oprah clap. I like that.
But everyone gets cards.
Am I right? Wasn't Chris the like sidekick henchman?
I think so.
Who? Yeah. The bald henchman sidekick.
Yeah.
That was him. There's like his sister was...
pretty close.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
So what do you remember about it?
Well, I just remember that thinking that Travolta was...
Oh, Sandy.
Oh, jeez.
I just remember, like, he seemed to be...
He said Cassavetes, by the way. Nick Cassavetes was the guy that I just said was Chris.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I just remember he was Travolta was really trying, seemed like he was really trying to keep up with Cage's crazy performance.
Well, it's funny because they actually spent probably about a month hanging out together before filming.
Yeah.
Where they were told to pay close attention to each other's mannerisms to get the caginess or the Travoltiness, and that's what.
So whose performance did they decide on the characters between each other, or did one of them just go first?
I don't know.
Did they film it in order and they just had to do an impression of one another, or did they decide on the characters together?
I think probably both and or.
Yeah. I don't know.
Now you want me to
yeah, let's look into the mind of either one of those gentlemen and decide
right.
which one is not crazy.
Right.
I've always thought, though, that the Nick Cage role is the thankless one because it's obviously more fun to play the villain. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the part you like.
Of course, yeah.
But the villain is going to have a comeuppance and lose, and that's kind of the deal. Travolta gets to play the villain for most of the film and gets the happy ending, finale, where it's like, hey, we're super excited that John Travolta's back, where Nicolas Cage gets to be the villain at the beginning, which is awesome. But then it's like, then the entire movie shits on him.
Yeah, but he does get a lot of the spinny, the 360 spinny camera shooting up in the sky.
True. All that good John Woo, doves flying.
Doves flying, yeah.
That church, Mexican standoff set piece shot is the most John Woo and the most amazing.
I thought the most John Woo thing was when the SWAT team invaded the hideout while that little kid was listening to Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Oh, God.
That is the most John Woo-y thing I've ever seen.
It's so good. So good.
The ceiling panel thing.
Yeah.
Also, I love that Joan Allen is in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every time I watch it, I'm like, why is Joan Allen in this movie? But I'm always really super happy that she
because
did.
They needed someone to bring it back to earth.
Yes.
I think this is something very telling of Nicolas Cage's career. He was called, and I quote, the jazz musician of acting, end quote, by David Lynch.
Wow.
If that's not his epitaph, I don't know what would be.
Wow.
Because that really sums it up, right? Here's David Lynch, who's David Lynch, and clearly, would you guys help me out here?
I mean, what's David Lynch? There's a colloquialism for Lynch.
Surreal?
For Lynch films.
Right.
Yeah. Lynchian.
Yes.
Right. Because they are so avant-garde and bizarre.
Right. So someone who's avant-garde and bizarre talking about jazz music.
Right.
And saying your acting style is like jazz music, which is avant-garde and bizarre and goes off the rails and takes you someplace you never expected to go and then brings you back.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying his acting style is that.
Right.
So where do you... How do you end up where he is now? Where do you get the Nicolas Cage where you have like bizarre religious films released directly to Netflix?
I don't know.
Okay, we're jumping ahead.
I don't know if we're jumping ahead.
We are.
Okay.
How dare you? There will be order, sir.
No, there's no order. We did that before.
Okay, so past the 90s, when we hit like 2000, here's a chunk of Cage films, I have not seen nary a one.
I've probably seen a lot of these.
Okay, so Matchstick Men. Well, let's start in the beginning. The Family Man, not seen it.
I oddly enjoy that movie.
That's not bad.
Sort of predictable Christmas movie, but as far as predictable Christmas movies about a businessman who needs to learn that business is – it's the – that classic like Christmas – we're pretending that America isn't all about businessmen being ruthless. So he needs to learn that he could have been a family man and could have lived a different life where he had married his sweetheart instead of being all about business.
Hmm.
But it's surprisingly good. I believe
it's pretty much like It's a Wonderful Cage.
Yeah. But also, isn't like Don Cheadle the angel who shows him?
I do believe that is him.
Yeah.
That's, really?
Yeah. But yeah, super watchable.
It's a lovely film.
Yeah,
it's
like Taya Leone is the woman.
Oh, right,
yeah.
On, right on.
Yeah. And she's always a joy to watch.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't believe that hasn't come up until this moment. But it's like It Could Happen to You when he won the lottery.
Okay.
And shared it with
another surprisingly delightful film.
Absolutely delightful. Yeah. A subtle, normal performance.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Sort of like you almost don't think about them because you don't expect Nicolas Cage to be the guy in that.
Right. So he's playing it sort of normal.
Exactly. Yeah. Like completely understated, like almost forgettable that it's
Nicolas Cage. He's an everyman.
Yeah. He is an everyman and he's playing it as an everyman.
That's a stretch.
Yeah. But then he follows that up immediately with Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yes. I mean, there are some other ones. There's Wind Talkers, Christmas Carol, the movie, Captain Corelli's Mandolin.
But did he learn to play the mandolin for that movie?
Seriously. That is
from
some
nothing.
Hard shit. I got some big fingers, and mandolins are hard. Yeah.
You don't need to tell me about your fingers, man.
Hey! Adaptation, he actually won an award for.
I love the movie Adaptation.
That's a great movie.
It might actually be my favorite movie that Nicolas Cage is in.
Really?
And his performance is brilliant in it. Like, it seriously, because – so the whole thing with Adaptation, if people haven't seen it, Charlie Kaufman – you know who Charlie Kaufman mm-hmm. is. He in
He's
real
life from Taxi, right?
Sure, we'll go with that.
Okay,
but Charlie Kaufman, the guy who wrote Being John Malkovich, guy who wrote Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, was in real life hired to adapt this book by Susan Orlean called The Orchid Thief, and what he gave them was the movie Adaptation, which is a movie about Charlie Kaufman being hired to adapt The Orchid Thief and not knowing how to do it. So about halfway through the movie, he realizes that all he knows is how to write about himself. So he's going to write a movie in the movie about Charlie Kaufman writing about The Orchid Thief. Nicolas Cage plays Charlie Kaufman. He also plays a fictional twin brother of Charlie Kaufman.
Nice.
And then the whole thing, which is very meta in the beginning, then goes in this completely different direction. The end is ridiculous but amazing. And it's just – it's great because he plays both of these characters that are completely distinct. Sort of like Face Off in a weird way.
Okay.
Yeah, but like he's playing the Charlie Kaufman character and sort of nailing the way that Charlie Kaufman is. But then also playing – is it Donald? Is that the name of the brother?
I don't recall the
brother. I want to say that it's Donald, but it's this like goofy hack writer brother of his that's like writing the worst movie ever and then ends up being successful writing that. It's a great movie. Seriously, if you haven't seen it,
no, I haven't.
I highly recommend it. But Nicolas Cage is fantastic in that, in both roles, which are distinct.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah, and he had the distinction of being one of three people that were nominated for an Academy Award for playing multiple roles in a film. And the other two were Peter Sellers, which isn't surprising.
Nope.
And Lee Marvin, which is surprising a little bit for Cat Ballou. And I think he's actually the one of the three that won was Lee Marvin for Cat Ballou.
Really?
And also here's Judy Greer, who is who's phenomenal. She's a voice on Archer, and she's
she was Kitty in Arrested Development.
She was Kitty in Arrested Development.
Take a good look at these,
which brings me to my point. When we were talking about Fast Times at Ridgemont High before, and we were all like, we're all thinking about Phoebe Cakes.
We are.
But as soon as someone says Adaptation, I think about Judy Greer.
Yeah, Judy Greer has an amazing topless scene in Adaptation.
She's an amazing actress. But when you talk about the movie, I'm like, God. But what's, I'm just a stupid man. I'm sorry.
But what's great is similar, but in an emotionally completely different way. Her being topless, much like Fast Times, is a fantasy sequence that the Nicolas Cage Charlie Kaufman character is having in his head. That also, like Fast Times, is then we see the reality of the situation play out after, but in this version is like this completely emotionally wrecking, like, because she's this waitress that is kind of flirting with him because she's a waitress.
Because
He's there.
Bigger tips.
And he thinks that they
No, I heard tips. You. I heard you.
But
heard
he you. Thinks they have a real relationship and then tries to ask her out. And like her face just drops in this way of like, oh.
That's not what I meant.
Yeah. It's just I cringe thinking about it right now. Yeah. So, but that, super fun movie. And then, we really are like right at that.
The weird stage.
Yeah, because he does National Treasure in 2004.
Which I've seen bits and pieces.
It's a watchable, dumb action movie.
Yeah,
it seemed heavily influenced by, what was that?
Raiders?
Well, Raiders.
Da Vinci Code.
Yeah. The Da Vinci Code was what it was trying to be. Like, it was like someone heard a description of the Da Vinci Code,
right,
was who like, wasn't as smart and like tried to.
Let's write a movie.
But I was so excited about it because it was a movie that was about American history, and I'm an American history buff. I love all history. I love world history, but American history is like, this is one of the things that like my mom was hitting me over the head with from as far as I remember. I love American history. And then I watched the movie and it's like, this is some basic fucking shit.
No, it was written.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was written by like very, because the Da Vinci Code, while that movie wasn't good.
Right.
The book went deep in terms of, we're pulling these references and it seemed clever versus like. National Treasure is not clever in any way. Like, it was clearly written by dumb people who seemed like they had an eighth grade history textbook that they flipped through.
It was like a mix between Raiders of the Lost Ark and Night at the Museum.
Sure.
I will say that Sean Bean made it through almost all of that movie.
Yeah.
He didn't die at all in that movie, as a matter of fact.
did he make it all the way through?
He went to jail.
I always assume he dies off screen. Like when I watched The Martian, I just assumed that like he had a heart attack off screen.
he just got cancer and died somewhere
I guess in a long enough timeline, all of his characters are going to die. Whether it's seen or not.
Don't be a fucking nerd about it, man.
But 2005, I like The Weatherman. I don't know if I'm the only person in this.
I love that.
Okay,
movie.
Great. Michael Caine being Michael Caine.
That is the best part of the film.
100%.
Cage is, he's good. He's really good.
It's sort of an everyman beaten down role for
him. Right. But
now I'm suddenly thinking that my choice to watch Stolen instead of The Weatherman was not the best choice.
That was
choice.
A terrible choice.
Bad choice.
Because
I was looking, there was like 12 of them on Netflix, and I was like, I'll go with this one. It's kind of action-y.
No. Always go with the more thoughty.
Yeah, I should have done that. And Michael Caine was in it. Why did I not watch that?
Yeah, the whole reason I saw Quills, because Michael Caine was in it.
Yeah.
You know,
I've watched a lot of bullshit because Michael Caine was in it.
I think we all have.
He makes like three movies a year, and he's done it since 1966.
And a lot of them are bad.
But when he says, what's a camel toe? In The Weatherman with Cage's daughter,
camel toe.
No, his role in The Weatherman is fantastic.
Perfect.
The daughter is really enjoyable.
Yeah.
He starts doing the archery.
I love that story, the interview he did when they asked him how he chooses his movie roles, because he chooses so many.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'll get a script in the mail. I'll read the first page. I'll read the last page. And the character they want me for is on both pages. I'd do the fucking film.
Perfect.
All right, so after The Weatherman, we get Lord of War, which...
That's a diamond in the rough as far as I'm concerned.
I have a really mixed feelings on that.
Really?
Because, like, it's enjoyable, but there's also something about it that, like... I will never remember that movie. If we talk about 100 Nicolas Cage movies, I will forget... Like, it's very forgettable.
It's Nicolas Cage playing, what, a Ukrainian arms dealer?
That's what I'm saying. It's super watchable. I liked watching it.
Jared Leto?
We will move on in 10 seconds and I will forget this movie ever existed.
For me, that's the one where, like, he's getting
his name
to
is
like
Yuri.
Yeah, Yuri.
He's getting to like the end of the reef. You know, he's about to like fall off into the abyss. Like that's that movie for me. That was his not his last good movie, because he's for fuck me, he's good in all his movies.
In but, every weird
but that
way.
One had like mass appeal, and yeah. I can totally see why. This is one of them action movies that has like a but very little substance, but a lot
but
of appeal.
It's super artsy though.
It is.
In yeah. giant chunks of that film, it reminisces back to the day of, you know, leaving Las Vegas and Fear and Loathing, you know, like all these weird sort of like artsy fartsy, even back to like, you know, a film he did called Birdie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very arty, very visual.
Yes.
You know, so it's sort of a departure from his normal, you know, action, screaming, guns mm-hmm. up in the air. Mm-hmm. But the story behind it, it's a good story. Yeah.
No, it actually has substance. It has yeah. it has a character. It has like Hawk. People need to learn some shit.
Come on, Ethan yeah. Hawke.
No, yeah, it's a good movie. Like I said, I don't know what my thing is with it. I feel like I keep forgetting. Like it didn't have the impression on me that it probably should. Maybe I should rewatch it. Maybe I'm overlooking it, but. Yeah. I remember liking it, but I just don't have a passion for it for some reason.
Right. Diversion. But. Ethan Hawke is underrated, right?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm think he's perfectly rated the way
perfectly
he is.
Perfectly
rated. Like he everyone agrees, like he's really good, but Gattaca. He doesn't have to do like all the shit.
Yeah, Gattaca. Exactly.
Okay. Come on,
yeah.
Gattaca.
Okay. Yeah.
Gattaca. I just love him.
I'm just saying.
I'm really into that dude right now for some but reason.
But you are you did hint. I think we're at what would have to be. I think if we were watching the Behind the Music, this yeah, would yeah. be the turn.
Okay.
Because after Lord of War, his yeah, next yeah. movie is probably his most ridiculed movie. Because I think the most people saw it. He's probably done worse. But his remake of The Wicker Man.
Oh, my God.
Which all I remember is him talking about bees and punching women.
Yeah, like, okay. The original is bizarre.
The original is bizarre, but is a great movie. It's yeah, Christopher yeah. Lee, and oh, it's yeah. this like really dark,
yeah.
interesting movie mm-hmm. that is probably a slow burn.
Yeah,
but
no, it's also one of those very slow-paced movies.
That's what I mean. It's like intentionally.
Like the 1970s that's kind of grainy. And
right. And really, it doesn't, right. yeah, it's breezy. Like yeah. they're not in.
It, I bet it's awesome
to.
On that cool 70s acid, but I yeah. didn't have any of that. They stopped making it.
I mean, there's a lot of people fucking just as like they're walking around.
Yeah, very Caligula.
Yeah. So there's a lot in the background, but no, I like the original quite a bit. The remake, while tempo wise is a lot faster, is so bizarre in a different way.
Yeah.
Because again, he punches women.
There's the whole, yeah, where there's like nonstop punching.
And like he punches a woman dressed as a bear, like, or he's dressed as a bear. Yeah. I don't know.
But the last half hour, you forget the movie that yeah. you're watching.
It's just him, like, just it might weird. As well be set to, you know, the, like Yakety Sax. It's just yeah. him running around punching people and getting bee helmets put on his face.
It's like Nicolas Cage at home.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know? Yeah, probably.
But he's
in his
that,
castle.
I don't think like that is Pete Cage. Island. Like I don't think he has a gear above what he showed in that movie. Yeah. He's throwing everything at the end of right, that movie. Right. All right. After that, he did a movie called World Trade Center. Anybody?
I think that's yeah. just a.
He's a firefighter.
A firefighter?
Firefighter.
And this was 2006, America? So this was 5 years after 9/11.
Very
that's
good.
That's enough yeah.
Are you a mathematician?
I mean, I don't like to brag.
He's a teacher.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Let me just do an edit for Fontina Turner. Are you a mathematician?
What was that?
Math.
That was Fontina Turner.
Oh, is that an Ohio accent?
Yeah, that's exactly how she fucking said it on our show and how we joke about it every once in a while. Okay, that's fine.
I mean,
I'll just be laying under this bus for a while.
If you want to say no, hi to Fontina, you can. I have no idea what you're talking about.
She's – okay.
Hi, Fontina. We've pulled the brakes on the show. Just say hello to you. You got a shout out, though. We're at a weird point, though, where like I either – I haven't seen these movies or...
You've seen Ghost Rider.
Well, I've seen Ghost Rider. I have not seen Next. I didn't see National okay. Treasure Book of Secrets.
Next is weird.
So I saw Ghost Rider and I've seen Next.
Yeah.
Ghost Rider, the first one was...
It's very comic booky.
Yeah.
It didn't remind me necessarily of the Ghost Rider comic book.
No,
I agree. Like, and I think his accent is not very great.
No,
I give them points for getting Sam Elliott. He was fun.
Sam Elliott was anytime super. Anytime you throw with Sam Elliott.
I'm going to be able to watch your movie if you put Sam Elliott in it. Yeah. So, like, there's that. And it's, it was all right. I remember the end. Like, I feel like my memory of watching Ghost Rider is that I got bored with it at some point. And, like, just the end sort of meandered and wasn't as fun as it should have been.
They threw, a few too many villains at it or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, we have the drippy one. And then
it wasn't really too many. It was just a cadre that you kind of got muddled into one.
I can't even remember the villain, to be honest. Yeah.
Well, you had, like, Lucifer, and then you had Lucifer's son.
Yeah.
And Lucifer's son had, like, three... he had like Earth, Wind, and Fire, or
what's
something
the guy's,
like that.
What's the guy's name?
I don't remember. It was that kid from American Beauty.
No. The Lucifer. He was the guy from Easy Rider.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's, Peter Fonda?
Yeah, that's why Peter they were Fonda playing off Lucifer. The whole motorcycle bullshit, because it's Peter Fonda.
Yeah. So, but I can say that next, we were about to leave a hotel room, and we were leaving a few hours early, and Next happened to come on. And we actually stayed until 11 o'clock to watch the end of Next.
Oh, my God. The log line for Next. I would not – anyone want to guess? Before Chris says, do you just want to guess what Next is about? Because I've now looked it up.
It's like a guy who can see the future or something like that.
The only thing I can think of is that Michael Crichton novel that was pretty enjoyable to read.
But yeah, apparently a Las Vegas magician who can see into the future is pursued by FBI agents seeking to use his abilities to prevent a nuclear terrorist attack.
Oh, yeah. That's
shit. Right. I wasn't even close. What's
Jennifer Beale in it. Right.
Oh, which and
really what held my attention.
And Julianne Moore.
Oh, your redheads.
Julianne Moore, Jennifer Beale.
Oh, yeah. It has. I'm just looking. I've never seen this movie, but Jim Beaver is in it, who's a character actor I always enjoy.
But what's weird is, you know, a little while later, he also did a movie called Knowing. And I don't mean to jump forward.
The Knowing.
I saw Next. But then Knowing came out a little while later, and I got the two confused because they seem like they should be the same exact movie.
That is MIT professor John Kostler links a mysterious list of numbers from a time capsule to past and future disasters and sets out to prevent the ultimate catastrophe. So, yeah, there's some overlap.
Right. You see, so that sounds it has like that time future thing going on. And I was like, so that's is it a sequel? What's going on? I didn't really understand.
Well, it's same film.
But Next was pretty good.
Sans the Beale and the redheads.
Yeah. The whole thing with Next was he could like he could see like 10 seconds into
minutes.
The a few minutes into the future or whatever it was. So I thought that one was pretty good.
I've got nothing.
Like Vegas magicians, you know. It's
sure. All right. Anyone for Bangkok Dangerous? Anyone want to?
Boy, oh boy.
I saw that movie when it first came out. Not in theaters, mind you. I typically don't go to theaters if I can help it.
Sure.
It is a weird, odd film, but somehow it fits Cage to a T.
That's a hitman who's in Bangkok to pull off a series of jobs, violates his personal code when he falls for a local woman and bonds with his errand boy.
It's a it's a total genre film that knows exactly what it is from start to finish.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, what's the one with what the hell's his name? The English guy.
Transporter?
It
sounds very
similar.
Like The Transporter. Yeah. Yeah, that is, I think, a fair description of the first Transporter movie.
Yeah. but it's you know, minus the Transporter guy. But insert Nicolas Cage and all of his Nicolas Caginess.
Sure. Which kind of makes it better in my mind.
It's weird, but it's weird though, because it's like Bangkok.
Hold on, so
like
you're saying that Bangkok Dangerous seems like a Transporter film.
Yes.
But Drive Angry doesn't? Because that's what I thought that one was.
We're going to talk about Drive Angry.
I've never seen that one.
So. I have strong opinions on Drive Angry.
Oh, really?
I'd like to hear about it.
But
does he drive angry?
He does drive angry. But before, I don't want to skip too far ahead because this is important.
Sorry.
Reel it back.
I want to know, I've never seen it, but I've heard great things about Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Wait a minute. It's terrible.
Okay. But I've heard he's really good at it.
Have you ever seen the first Bad Lieutenant?
Yes.
That is an amazing, weird.
That's kind of why I never
naked
wanted to see
Harvey Keitel crying. Like, that is Bad Lieutenant. the version that Cage does, which, what, like a sequel, a prequel?
I think it was just a spinoff.
Another Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah.
There's a scene in the Harvey Keitel version, the original Bad Lieutenant, where he pulls two probably underage girls over for speeding or something. Gross. Yeah. It's this whole scene where he's like, you can get out of this ticket if you show me your ass, your tits. And he's like, you know, jerking off on the side of the car. But it's Harvey Keitel, and he does it this like creepy ass Harvey Keitel, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that guy can jack off.
Nicolas Cage doing it.
And he did it all for a bag of silver.
You're right. Thanks. Jesus. Oh, wait, wrong one.
Yep.
Nicolas Cage doing that. It was not even close to being creepy.
Was it like a remake? Did he do the exact same scene?
Almost the same exact scene.
So it was really like a remake, but they did it in New Orleans because that's where he...
That's what I said. It's like a spinoff, a sequel, a prequel. I wonder if he was...
Is it weird because it was Werner Herzog?
I mean, that goes without saying.
Oh, okay.
It's always going to be weird.
So this was during the time. So the Port of Call, New Orleans, Bad Lieutenant, this was during the time where he owned the La Lurie house. So I'm wondering if he actually was staying there at the time. With the spooky ghosts.
Yeah. Maybe the ghost, you know, possessed him or something. I mean,
he probably got possessed by a ghost, you guys.
Well, do you think he got a ghost blowjob like in Ghostbusters?
If in the new Ghostbusters, I don't see a ghost going down on one of those women, they have not done their job correctly.
Damn right. Yeah, you've done it wrong.
I want to see a ghost face buried as a pussy.
On record. All right, so then
what does that come out? Can we do an episode during that?
No, because we're not acknowledging it. We're not allowed to have it.
We called it off.
Yeah, I know.
We canceled the movie.
No. I'm not saying I'm not going to review it. I called for everyone to stop talking about it.
BS around it. Yeah. What a better reason for us to get together and talk about it.
Yeah, commiserate.
All right, sure. Yeah, well, a bunch of dudes will all get together and talk about the Ghostbusters movie.
With ladies.
Yeah, we should get – if we're going to do that, we need some women in this room.
We do need some ladies.
I'm sure my wife will come along.
Yeah.
Dana. My wife.
God. Okay. All right.
Okay. Back to Cage.
So he does a back-to-back animated movies that I feel like we can gloss over here.
Yes.
G-Force and Astro Boy.
Well, he also did Ant Bully, and it's insane that he did a voice in Astro Boy.
Sure. Yeah. No, that's weird. Okay. But now this is an important point because I wrote this down as a note to myself. Okay. 2010, he does the movie Kick-Ass. I wrote this down as the last time I really enjoyed Nicolas Cage in anything.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
He was kind of brilliant in that movie.
I mean,
he ate everything on screen.
Yeah. No, he knew what he was
bloody.
Doing.
It was cursing.
Oh. Yeah.
It was a part written for him.
He knew exactly what was asked of him.
Yeah.
And that movie is really fun.
Mm-hmm. It was also his one chance to play Batman.
True.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean,
that's a really good point.
Right? Yeah. Like, I mean, he was Big Daddy, but
it was
his chance to play Batman. And, you know, if you're going to have that, you might as well take it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Know? But yeah, Kick-Ass, good job. Like, that's solid Nicolas Cage. That was 6 years ago. but then he does the short.
Are you making the argument that it's all been downhill from there? Because I would argue that there has been several downhills.
Well, I think the peak was the 90s, then he's on a decline, and then it spikes back up for Kick-Ass.
Okay.
But, like, not as high as the 90s. But, you know, if we're watching, it's like, beep, beep, and then, like,
the EKG
there's life. There's signs of life.
There's still life.
That's the thing. It's like, this is the reason why we decided to talk about him. He's so interesting.
Yeah.
As, like, because his career is, he's always there.
Yeah.
He's lurking in the shadows. Sometimes he's great. Usually he's good. Sometimes he's in shitty movies, but he's not the reason they're shitty.
Right.
Did we gloss over The Sorcerer's Apprentice?
No, that was next.
Okay. Because the only reason I know about that is because Jay Baruchel is in it.
Okay.
And he was also in,
This is the End.
This is the End.
Yeah.
He was he was in Freaks and Geeks, wasn't he?
No. He was in, The one that was in college.
Yeah, Accepted. Well,
thank you. Yeah, is it Accepted? I almost said Accepted, but it didn't feel right to me.
No, Undeclared.
Thank you.
Undeclared, Accepted yeah. is the Jonah Hill movie.
Right.
Yeah, Undeclared is the Jay Baruchel.
He's Judd the guy Apatow, he has a little Canadian thing. Flag tattoo somewhere on his chest or something.
My over his heart.
A little yeah. crush
and
on
he currently,
him. Yeah.
What is it, Man Seeking Woman is his show on FX?
Yeah.
I think.
Okay, so the Sorcerer's Apprentice is what, a Harry Potter movie?
Yes.
How do you
No, correct. It's based, it's a Disney, it's based right? on the it's based on the Mickey Mouse's Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Oh,
so from the Nicolas show.
It's 90 minutes of Nicolas Cage moving water buckets from one
Seriously?
Place to another. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And hey, that's great, guys.
What the fuck? Alfred Molina is
Lars,
in this movie?
I'm your father.
That is a solid Mickey Mouse. I never knew that we would need
that's
it.
Pretty good.
Yeah. I'm just saying. Yeah. So now they own Star Wars.
But also, Alfred Molina is in this movie. That, I'm really thrown off by that. I'm just going to keep saying it. Alfred Molina is in the movie.
Yeah, I heard. Okay. I heard. He's also in Raiders of the
and
Lost
Monica
Ark.
And Monica Bellucci? Like, what is this cast?
I don't know. I've never seen it. Why are we talking about the movie? Who saw it?
It was Chris. Chris pulled the brakes on this.
I never saw it. I just wanted to mention that it was based. You know,
so it's based from, on the old Disney.
From Fantasia. Really? Yeah, the Sorcerer's
it was.
Apprentice
I believe it was a
portion.
Disney movie that they were trying to make another live action movie.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
I don't think it did very
well. I mean, honestly.
And dancing and
you brought it up as a joke, but they were probably trying to capitalize on the success of Harry Potter.
Probably.
So with
probably.
Those of magic
it's probably,
shit.
Yeah,
it's a
all
magic shit.
So then he makes a sequel to Ghost Rider. He makes.
Yeah. Which was weird.
Yes. I never even.
I didn't see that one.
I saw both of them.
Yeah. But then he allegedly made a movie called Trespass. He allegedly made a movie called Seeking Justice. And then Drive Angry, which is almost campy enough to work. It's got William Fichtner, who I love. It's ridiculous. There's a scene where Nicolas Cage, wearing a full suit, has sex with a woman who's naked, riding him. And then guys come in the room to try to kill him. And he shoots them while continuing to have sex with this woman.
Okay.
Yeah. I recommend watching it. It's not a good movie, but it is a fascinatingly train wreck of a movie.
I feel like for some reason I've only actually seen that scene.
It's really, I mean, if you're going to see one
sometimes,
scene.
Sometimes when I'm watching really crappy movies, I'll just watch them at 1.5 times speed. You know, and it works for me. Can I just go back to Spirit of Vengeance there for a second?
You may not.
No, just for the
no,
fact
why?
That Idris Elba was in that movie.
Yeah.
And
best part of the film.
Best part of the film, dies halfway
through it.
And that's what sucks. Because he really, I feel like.
Well, Christopher
they
Lambert.
They should have just made him Ghost Rider.
Hold on. Christopher Lambert was also in that film, too.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, I love that you call him Lambert.
I'm just saying.
That's great. It's just to make sure that everyone likes Highlander, I call him Christopher Lambert.
Nice. That can be only
but
one.
No, I mean, Fichtner plays the devil and plays it really fun in Drive Angry.
Okay, so is this like a Robert De Niro in Angel Heart kind of devil? With Mickey Rourke?
I'm not catching. I don't know the movie well enough.
Never seen. Oh my god.
Yeah,
that is terrible.
And actually, I'm sorry. William Fichtner is officially credited as the accountant. They don't even call. But he basically like Nicolas Cage escapes hell and is going to rescue his daughter. And there's a devil character that's chasing him down.
So it's Ghost Rider 3.
He's having sex with Amber Heard, right?
No. He's having sex with a random woman. Amber Heard is the person he's trying to rescue.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Because she is lovely. I like her. She's kind of badass, too. Yeah. She's a race car driver, and she's very open about her bisexuality. And she's not a half bad actress. I like
nice,
her.
Nice. Isn't she currently with Johnny Depp? Is that still true?
Oh, yeah. They were
together
married
for,
now.
Yeah, I believe aren't they're married. They? And they had some recent – they, like, lied to France to get their dog in the country or some weird scandal.
They've been living in France for, like, 10 years.
Yeah, but it turned out they, like, forged some paperwork or something. Gotcha. All right. Then we got Season of the Witch. We got
– Joe.
We got Joe. We got Stolen.
Joe?
I don't know what Joe is.
When Season of the Witch came out, that was when a whole bunch of – terrible witch movies came out all at the same time.
Yeah.
It was like
it was technically the season of the witch, because a lot of witch
movies. Yeah, but it was like it was during like the late 90s, early 2000s when all like the meteor movies happened. It was like it was like oh, now we're just gonna do witches, and it all happened at the same time, and they were like all
probably the
Blair Witch 2.
Yeah.
Part 2.
Yeah.
They were all terrible at the same time.
I remember going to see Blair Witch Part 2 because I was like, you know, this first Blair Witch movie seems weird, but this one seems like it's going to explain stuff.
No.
And then it, like, I was so much more confused and angry after but the second one. Because
it was a separate movie. And honestly, if you know that it's a separate movie that's not the Blair Witch Project, it's actually kind of a fun little horror movie.
It actually is a good horror
movie. Yeah, I like it a lot. Yeah.
All right. Well, then we got The Croods. He did an animated voice in The Croods. He was in something called The Frozen Ground.
Nah.
Anyone?
No.
Something called Outcast.
Do we, terrible, which that's the Hayden Christensen.
Okay, that was like, all right.
We're not going to talk about Christopher saying meteor movies.
No.
What? It's you don't like know his, anything we about meteors?
It's like his wrap theater.
Up. Oh, okay, it's my like bad.
Yeah, if we're going to.
My bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, Joe, to jump back real quick.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Joe is a fairly decent film.
Okay, I've not
seen Joe. Understated character, very stoic.
Okay. Ex-con, who is the unlikeliest of role models, meets a 15-year-old boy and is faced with the choice of redemption or ruin.
Yeah, it's good.
That sounds good.
It's actually really, really good.
It's a good log line. I'd watch that.
Yeah. Good, Joe. Right.
Exactly. Yeah, Joe. All right.
Well, then we got – then we're at 2014. He does Left Behind, which is so fascinating. I've not seen it, but I know that it is a remake of a Kirk Cameron movie.
Yep.
I know that it is.
Oh, seriously?
I know that
it is based on a series of books that are like Christian fueled.
They're Christian fiction that I've actually read the books because I was very bored.
Did you really read those books?
I used to work in a library and they were super popular. And so I was very curious and I read some of them. So they're like.
Where were you that they were super popular?
At the library when they were being like checked out all the time.
In Baltimore somewhere?
Baltimore?
It was Prince George's County.
Oh. Oh, okay.
There you go. That explains it.
Yeah, they're
that explains it.
Yeah.
Oh, that explains it.
But they're terribly written books about the apocalypse. So this is like
the reckoning.
All
right?
of the Christians have been raptured, and then these are all the people who are left behind who still are going to go through these trials and have a chance to still make it to heaven.
So they're in what, limbo?
No, they're on Earth.
You blow,
but the reckoning's happening. So
basically,
in the
all
Bible,
the
it's like
yeah.
There's a sect of Christianity that believes that when the reckoning happens, all the people that are good and whatever, good for whatever, faithful to Christianity or whatever, are like zapped to heaven.
They just disappear.
Whoever is down here is left behind. And you have a chance to become good enough to go up to heaven before everything down here is
fucked.
But
also like... The whole thing, too, is there's an antichrist who shows up, and like everything gets really bad on Earth because all the Christians are gone. So Earth is going to turn into this just terrible.
Joe, what they're saying is all the Republicans are going to be gone.
What?
But then so the whole series is about these survivors like trying to navigate the world now that this like antichrist is in power
so
and
is
all this,
this
bad
like,
stuff is happening.
Basically The Road.
No, because it's not Christian.
It's Christian. It's first of all.
Oh God, the road
series
wasn't interesting.
The road was super
interesting.
Oh,
the road was so interesting.
God, no,
that was so interesting.
Get out of here. That was the only novel, not the only novel I read in one sitting.
Yeah,
film is awesome too.
So it's badly written Christian fiction that only Christians bought.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
And the thing is, like, it was made with Kirk Cameron, who is very famously super Christian.
Yeah.
And fundamentalist. Why they remade it?
I guess it did well enough that
but
this
like,
was
why
the
remake
upgrade?
It? Because they wanted to make it better for the masses, so let's remake it and put Nicolas Cage in it.
Well, Nicolas Cage, Leah Thompson, and Chad Michael Murray.
What?
I mean, that's the cast that's really going to sell it.
I'm waiting for Howard the Duck to show up.
Right.
does Nicolas Cage have any dog in that fight?
I don't.
Is my question.
We don't know.
He hasn't said.
I'm not sure. You know?
No, I think Nicolas Cage probably just thought it was fun or like thought it would be interesting. He does a lot of, I mean, like Drive Angry, a lot of these movies we're mentioning are playing with Christian themes. That's what you know, the
maybe he likes to poke the dog.
Yeah, because Ghost Rider plays with those themes. Yeah. Like,
honestly, I mean, this version of Christianity is not Catholic, and that's how he was raised.
Right.
Right.
So I wouldn't assign that to him. I don't assume he's still Catholic.
Uh-huh.
But if he's appearing in this story, like, it makes you wonder. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Right. But let's go ahead, and then after that, anyone, maybe Chris watched these on Netflix, but I've got Rage.
How was Rage,
that
Chris?
Is
was
on that Netflix. I did
Carrie
not watch
sequel?
It. I, look.
I, you know, that was, you know what? The Rage.
That was the prequel to
I
Carrie.
I only stayed up till 4 watching Nicolas Cage movies, recent Nicolas Cage movies that are on Netflix.
Okay,
I was only able to get a few out.
Okay.
So Rage is apparently when the daughter of a reformed criminal is kidnapped, he rounds up his old crew and seeks his own brand of justice. Okay.
I feel like Nicolas Cage seeks his own brand of justice a lot in a lot of his movies.
Well, then we've got...
It's like Van Damme or something.
Dying of the Light, which I've never even heard of.
That's the one, I think that is a Michael Jackson biopic.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
made that up.
Because he was allergic to sunlight?
All right, Bubbles, let's go.
Fun fact, Michael Jackson and Nicolas Cage married to the same woman.
That's very true.
But yeah, Dying of the Light is when a devastating illness threatens to end Evan Lake's career in the CIA. He goes rogue to hunt down a terrorist who tortured him during a mission.
And seek his own brand of justice.
So he's seeking his own brand of justice.
Right.
I think it's fair to say.
So this is Mission Impossible 2.5.
Then we've got The Runner.
On Netflix.
In the aftermath of the 2010 BP oil spill, an idealistic but flawed politician is forced to confront his dysfunctional life after his career is destroyed in a sex scandal.
After seeking his own brand of justice.
It's to seek his own brand of justice. Then we got Pay the Ghost.
Which is weird. I've seen that one.
You've seen Pay the Ghost.
Yeah. Which is like a mix between some sort of, you know, cheesy ghost movie like Ghost and
pottery. Sorry, did you just call Ghost a cheesy ghost movie?
Yeah, there's like pottery involved. Yeah.
What?
But this is a professor frantically searches for his son who was abducted during a Halloween parade.
Right. So it's kind of half Flatliners, half Ghost.
Okay.
Flatliners was good.
Flatliners was rad.
So was Ghost.
Okay.
We can agree to defer.
There's no ghosting here.
All right. Well, then we got
Ditto. Ditto.
We're up to 2016, but the Trust.
I don't know what that is.
A pair of cops investigating a drug invasion stumble upon a mysterious bank vault, and this stars Nicolas Cage and Elijah Wood.
Oh, Deadeyes?
Has that come out?
And Nicolas Cage is character's name is Stone, and Elijah Wood's character's name is Waters.
Wonderful.
It sounds great. You asked if this came out. It was released May 13th. So it just came out.
So it just came out not much fanfare. So
I don't think it had a theatrical release, though. I mean,
Nicolas Cage and old Deadeyes?
It says it came out in May, but that did not have a theatrical release. Like that.
Hmm.
Yeah, that must have been a direct to video. Now, his last movie, we are now up to his
current events.
His current events is a movie called Dog Eat Dog, and it's him and Willem Dafoe. And I have actually heard that this is getting critical acclaim and people say it's good.
Because it's Dafoe.
Yeah, it's like doing the film festival circuit. Like it's been getting praise. So there's
check that one out.
There's hope that his next movie might be a good movie.
Yeah.
It was a firefight.
I heard that he was he had actually won the role of the Green Goblin in the 2002 Spider-Man.
Yeah, and he didn't take it. For
he didn't take it.
Well, I mean, because you had Dafoe. Come on.
Yeah.
Like how do you?
Yeah, he actually there were several times in reading about him that he declined roles because he said I'm just not right for this. He wants someone else.
The wrestler. Yeah, the wrestler. Like, and it's not clear because there's different stories of why he didn't do it. But his version is that he didn't think he could bulk up in time.
Right. Well, and there's the other version where him and Rourke Mickey Rourke were going out for the same part, and the producer or director.
Well, that's Aronofsky. What Aronofsky says, yeah, yeah. That like Nicolas Cage bowed out to give it to Mickey
Rourke.
Like,
he's like, I trust in, you know, Rourke's, you know, portrayal of it. I'm out.
And he hadn't done anything really huge in a while, Mickey Rourke, right? So
no, that was a big comeback film.
Yeah,
for
right.
Mickey
it
Rourke.
Really was.
Absolutely. Because after that, didn't he get, he was Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe. Yeah, no, something with Stallone. What was the thing with Stallone?
Did he do the Expendables?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
This is what's interesting, though. Like, in looking up stuff, so Nicolas Cage is doing interviews for Dog Eat Dog, which was at the Cannes Film Festival. But he gave this quote, which is a very fascinating quote, especially coming from Nicolas Cage. He said, the thing that has happened in a lot of recent years I've noticed is that the filmmaking process has been hijacked by the money people. The financiers and the producers have a certain box they want to check. We need another action set piece. They change the script during production and they make it fit where they can to get more money in places like Cannes. That can happen on a small movie as much as it can happen on a big movie. So, like, Nicolas Cage kind of speaking very bluntly about the state of films. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I thought that was interesting coming from him.
Well, he's been doing it since, what, 1981, 82? Yeah. So, yeah, he probably has some insight.
Yeah, and I'd still love to know how he picks projects, but
it's probably a dartboard.
So a dartboard that he has on his coffee table, right. And he has an amount of Coke on each one.
Well, do we want to hear? So we're up to present day. I do want to hear from you guys if you have things that stand out or whatever. But I did find Nicolas Cage's what he considers his four most memorable roles.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
From the Cage's mouth?
Yeah. This is from Nick Cage. So he says, there's a few of them, sure. I thought that Werner Herzog and I got to something special in Bad Lieutenant. I'm sorry. We've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
And then he said, certainly Mike Figgis and I found something pretty emotionally naked in Leaving Las Vegas. I was very happy with Vampire's Kiss, which in my opinion was almost like an independent laboratory to start realizing some of my more expressionistic dreams with film performance.
Making things up like that? He's just making shit.
We've been
out
doing
of his
this
mouth.
For this long, and you're surprised by that?
I know.
Quote.
Come on.
Then using what I had learned in Vampire's Kiss and putting into a very big action movie in the form of Face Off with John Woo. If you look at those two movies back to back, you can see where I stole from my performance in Vampire's Kiss.
Can you? Because I can. I certainly can. Oh, yeah, I totally believe it.
Bad Lieutenant, Leaving Las Vegas, Vampire's Kiss, and Face Off.
It's like
are the ones that Nicolas Cage says stands out.
Yeah, well, because well, they are the ones that stand
well,
out.
Maybe they're,
he is his most cagiest.
Well, maybe they're turning points in his processes, you know? Maybe he finally realized, oh, I can go super fucking crazy in this film to subtle to back to crazy. Maybe he figured something out. You know, and it changed the way he personally did stuff.
Yeah, I can see those as milestones
in
his storied career.
Yeah.
I mean, Bad Lieutenant is the one that seems the strangest to me.
A little bit.
It is very strange because Harvey Keitel, you can't really top nudie Harvey Keitel flailing around.
But like
crying.
When you're saying, though, too, the other one, so Vampire's Kiss, which I think Chris mentioned earlier, is like the first glimpse at weird Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see that Face Off, big action movie that we all remember.
With Travolta.
And then Leaving Las Vegas is the Academy Award movie. Yeah. Oh. So I understand why all those are going to make that list. Mm-hmm. But then, the Bad Lieutenant is the one that you're like, oh, okay.
But it just sounds really weird.
Yeah.
It's like the odd man out. One of these things is not like the other.
Yeah, right.
All right. But we've been doing this a long time. We all need to go to bed.
Yes.
But do we have any conclusions? Are there any final words on Nicolas Cage?
Watch some Cage films.
Sure.
Yeah.
Makes me want to take my face off.
Take your face
off.
But that's the question. If you had to pop in one movie right now, One Nicolas Cage
movie. One Nicolas Cage film.
Yeah, you're going to leave here and you're going to watch a Nicolas Cage movie. What is it?
Lord of War.
Wow.
Raising Arizona.
God, you know what? I think that I haven't seen Raising Arizona in so long that I would probably like to see that. Yeah. And if not that, then, you know, I would prop in Con Air because, I mean, you know, you got some Blue Shemmy in there.
Yeah. You don't have to defend Shemmy.
You know, Blue was one of Nicolas Cage's ideas
for his last name, right?
Yeah.
Blue.
So, you know
Blue
what? Shemmy. I might just go home a different and watch, career. A Meteor film.
Yeah. Okay.
I hope you don't think I ever judged you for that being your Cage film because Con Air is fun every is. Single goddamn time
it's
I see it.
Fun.
It's it's awesome.
Face off.
Sweet mullet.
Face off.
I'm going face off.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah,
all right.
Sure.
Good.
But that changes at any time because there's a Cage movie for every mood.
Very good. God, there really is.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we picked him to talk about because this motherfucker, there's something fucking wrong with him.
I feel like we only scratched the surface, too. I don't think we've finished it.
Barely opened the Cage.
But honestly, though. We've been talking about him for so long. The only way to conclude this is to get him on the show.
Right.
I think he might do it.
He probably could.
Yeah. Yeah. But the invitation is officially extended for both, I assume, the Curioso and for Hobo Radio.
We're calling you out.
We'd love. Yeah. We're not calling him out.
We're loving
that's the way to do it. Call him out.
I feel like we're calling him out.
Stop calling him out.
Yeah.
We're not calling him out.
Just for the record, Christopher Scarborough called you out. Lars and I just love you, and we don't want to fight you.
Right.
Unless you're a guy at Royal Farms who thinks that Lars.
I'm way more Scarborough than the guy from Motley Crue. I'm just saying. Try and put me in an armbar, Nick Cage, with your crazy eyes.
And remember, kid, don't do drugs or you go to hell before you die.
I got to piss in the cage.
so late.
I know.
Yeah, worth it.
Make that happen. Thank
worth
you.
It.
No, that was so much fun.
Hobo Radio is a production of HoboTrashCan.com. If you enjoyed the show, please rate or review it on iTunes.